Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Friday to you. Hope you are having a good one in the greater Houston area or wherever you're listening. And however you're listening, thanks for making us a part of your day. The Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line is the way you get involved. 713-572-4610. Or on the YouTube page or the Twitch page. Both of them presented proudly by Mokarem Injury Lawyers. And
they keep it 100.
They do indeed keep 100. At least that's what I've heard from time to time. All right. I want to take you back to yesterday, 7:30 a.m. in particular, when Payne Pendergast had one of many conversations with general manager of this Houston Texans football team, Nick Caserio. We talked about some of it yesterday, and obviously you'll hear about it a lot. We're 3 weeks out from the draft, and we're talking about free agency. Like, all of these things are pertinent. You had some takeaways, some more takeaways and things that you think that it's fair to kind of draw some conclusions on. So let us know if you agree with these conclusions that we'll draw. And we'll start here. And this is a cut to Byron. This is Nick Caserio on Payne Pendergast. And Sean asked a pretty good question about, I hate, wait, let me press pause.
He was all right.
Let me press pause. Because that came out very, very wrong.
It was all right.
That was not meant to be a judgment of any sorts. And it sounded very judgmental. Sean is very good at this. Seth is very good at this. I hope to be as good as them someday when I grow up. But I thought Sean asked a good question when he asked, were there maybe times last year where D'Amico and offensive line coach Chris Strasser and Bobby Slowick and a player just kind of weren't necessarily on the same page?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico, but I mean, you know, there's always a lot of communication that takes place. It's never one particular thing. So in the end, going back to when we made the decision, when D'Amico made the decision that he did to move on from Bobby, certainly wasn't an easy decision. So I'd say the fact that Nick and Cole have some level of experience together, I mean, it always helps when anytime that you have an opportunity to work with one another. Again, like, we've won 20 games over the last 2 years. So like, a lot of things that we were doing, you know, couldn't have been all that bad. So, but you know, we're just trying to figure out like, all right, what's the best thing for the Texans? What do we think we got to do moving forward? I think we'll work through it here. We'll try to have a good off season, you know, try to get the players, let's say, in good condition. And then once we get to training camp, obviously we're going to have more information. We're going to have a better idea of where we are. And the whole goal is to just make sure that we're as prepared as we possibly can be for whoever the opponent is week one.
All right. So this is read between the lines, make your own conclusions. And mine might be different from yours,
okay,
or Byron's,
all right,
or any of our listeners. But personally, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, obviously, I'm not going to speak for D'Amico. That's fair. But as he's listening to talking about that question, you know, was there a disconnect? You know, we can draw the conclusion. Clearly, there was something, you know, because that was one of D'Amico's best friends in the business.
Sure.
And he had to let him go. They kept one of the offensive line coaches who, as he said there, you got to read between the lines. And that's what we're in the business of, and sometimes, unfortunately, in this business. You know, he mentioned, well, he's, you know, he and Nick Caley have a relationship, you know, and it's never one thing. Those are the two things from Nick's answer that really stood out to me. It's never one thing. And the question was about, was there a disconnect, lack of communication, whatever it may be. I think that's a yes. To me, reading between the lines, that's a yes. It's never one thing. He's right. But it's sort of an artful dodge there, you know, from the question itself. And that's what Nick Caserio, you know, it does and should do. But if we're listening to this, it's like, okay, yes, all those things that we're sort of postulating and thinking about and wondering about had to have been a factor.
I mean, yeah, and I think that that's probably better answered by going back to, you know, D'Amico Ryan speaking at various points throughout this week, he frequently using kind of the messaging of one voice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, I think, and you can make the, you know, kind of potential for multiple voices, so to say, in different levels. Like, maybe it's coach and coordinator, maybe it's coordinator and, you know, assistant coach, like whatever it is. But clearly there was a lack of synergy in objective or in the ways to get to the objective somewhere within the process, because in some ways, like, the new messaging feels like it is answering to that previous problem that existed. And so it does feel like that was a previous problem. And I do want to ask you, do you think that that's encouraging, right? Because obviously it's not encouraging that you had the problems. It's very bad that you had these particular issues largely derail, or I guess, man, I shouldn't say derail. You won 10 games, you won your division, you won a playoff game. But I mean,
we know what we saw.
Yeah, it hampered the ultimate aptitude that you were able to reach because of this portion of your team. Do you think that's encouraging at all? That it seems like if he's leaning on yes, there, or if we're kind of reading between the lines and seeing yes, there was some sub-level issue there, that they're working so hard and they're speaking so much and they're focusing so much on the idea of having that unison and that unity and that one singular voice going in.
I think that's the focus. I think that's the goal. That's the focus. Again, he just alluded to it. These guys have worked together. It's never one thing, but let's talk about, you know, the way they're going to move forward with this. And I think it's fair. You know, it's not a criticism because, frankly, I think all of us would have done the same thing. That wasn't working. There wasn't a communication.
No.
The offensive line coach and the coordinator clearly had different ideas of how they should be approaching these things. And, oh, by the way, we saw it on the field. You know, we talked about it at 10 a.m. about 2 hours ago now. You know, what they did to Dalton Schultz was frankly unfair. We can criticize Dalton Schultz and his blocking and everything else, but it's unfair.
Or
his face.
That sounds like a joke.
His headband.
Well, I wasn't going there. I wasn't just saying we're bullying him. No, that sounds like a joke, but I do mean it. Like, I feel like sometimes we got upset at Dalton Schultz because in his face or in his demeanor.
You see the frustration.
And I think that frustration sometimes read as, oh, he don't want to try. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if that is just a lack of belief in what's being brought to the table, right? Because even if you're trying, I think we all know in our lives that if you don't really believe what you're doing, it makes it tougher to get there. I really do hope that a level of unity, a level of synergy it helps bring a level of belief in what these guys are doing. And this is where I can maybe get on track with, I guess, the hopium, for lack of a better term. And I try not to say that judgmentally, that a lot of people have with the offensive line, that, okay, at least if there is a game plan that, one, obviously is just going to be better than the circumstances that these guys were left out with last year. Mm-hmm. But then, two, these guys can believe in, is capable of actually getting the job done, then that can probably raise the level in the performance.
And I think that's what they're doing. Yeah. You know, again, it was unfair. We can criticize him, but it was unfair to have a pass-catching tight end be on the edge one-on-one with an elite or even very good NFL defensive rush end. So clearly, I think the answer, the reading between the lines here is, yeah, there was a disconnect. Yeah, the communication was bad. And yeah, they feel much better about the relationship and what Cole Popovich is going to bring, in terms of implementing Nick Caley's offense.
All right, Mr. Between the Lines reader, what do you feel here? When Nick Caserio, on with Payne and Pendergast yesterday, was asked about the four picks in the top 89, which is, 25, the first round, 25, second round, 58. I think I traded a 59 yesterday when I was messing with my mock draft simulator. Neither here nor there. And then you have a couple in the 80s in round three. You have all of those picks. Nick, in the 2025 draft, like, moving up, moving back, what's it looking like?
Yeah, there's always opportunities top to bottom. So our grading system may be a little bit different than some other grading system, but I think our job between now and the end of April is to understand and know as much about each player as possible, understand what we have. I would say the only thing that we quote unquote need to do is draft good football players with the right mindset and the right mentality, regardless of the position that we play. So that's where our focus is. That's how we've approached it here the last 4 years. That's how we've approached it the last 2 years specifically with D'Amico and I. And that's not going to change this year. So we're not going to all of a sudden do something different this year than we've done previous years. So no position is going to be off limits. Draft good football players. Look at the grade. Follow our board. Follow our process. And just get them in the building however we see fit.
All right, I want to clear something up. I set that up incorrectly. That was actually a question about, you know, Are you still doing like the draft evaluation of guys outside of kind of positions of need further than that, especially with the picks that you have and the needs that you might kind of more be drafting towards?
And I think that set up perfectly. And I said it before Robinson was brought in or any of, you know, Trent Brown or any of these guys. You know, one thing that Nick Caserio hates, every general manager hates it, but it seems like Nick Caserio really, really wants to be in a position where he's a little unpredictable. And as much as you and I might say, oh, offensive lineman, oh, maybe a receiver, I think it's really unpredictable, you know, and I think that's the position that he likes to be in, and that's what he said. I believe he said no position is off limits. It might sound a little crazy for you and me, but really no position is off limits. Hell, we talked about tight end earlier, you know, and at this point it might sound crazy for you and me, but if there's something crazy that happens in the draft, he's in a position to move up or move down and be a little unpredictable.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the objective. I might be a little more conservative in that way. Like anytime I hear move up, I get a little shaky.
Sure.
Because that is, you're really betting on, I perfectly identified this. And I mean, if you're moving up for like a Tyler Warren, I get why you would feel that confidence. He has looked like a monster in his time in college. And then obviously all through this particular offseason as you get ready for the draft. And that brings me back to the text line, the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line specifically. The 8-2 asks, would you guys give up an extra first round pick next year? So next year's first round pick, in order to move up and get Tyler Warren. This person would. They go further to say that, you know, he looks like J.J. Watt if J.J. Watt had stayed at tight end. How do you feel about that? Because, again, you talk about, like, hey, tight end, that level of versatility and being able to draft anything. Would you take that level of being able to draft everything and then give advanced additional capital in order to move up to get a player like that?
That is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable with
it. I don't either.
And I acknowledge I'm being a scaredy cat. That's fair, but I don't feel comfortable with that. Even understanding Tyler Warren is really good. He feels like he'd be the type of player that you know, splits the difference of what we were talking about earlier when it comes to tight end. You want somebody who's going to impact the passing game, especially better than what Dalton Schultz did last year, which, of course, you can blame on various different things besides just Dalton himself. But then also, you would very much like somebody who can contribute to the run game, especially in a way that Nick Caley, even if we don't know exactly what he wants to run, we know he likes big formations. We know that he likes those. I know that he's spoken about being more of a game plan offense and kind of wanting to hit various things. So maybe he doesn't specifically do that, but giving him the versatility and the option of having your tight end in line in those types of things, that'd be cool. I just don't know if I prioritize that over solidifying an offensive line that is the foundation of all these things, or giving yourself another wide receiver, or making your defense even better in attacking quarterbacks on the opposing side.
Yeah, that would be a no for me.
Okay. All right.
But
you're also a scaredy cat. Welcome.
I am a scaredy cat when it comes to a top 10 pick. To move from 25 into top 10, 11, whatever it may be, for Tyler Warren, that's a big amount of equity.
What if it's not like up beyond 14 to get that? And what if it's like,
well, then that's what I'm talking about. Like Nick Caserio's in a perfect position.
Okay.
You know, this is what he wanted. He didn't want to be predictable. Oh, they're drafting a guard. Oh, they're drafting a tackle. Now you plausibly believe that there are some options there, you know? So I would be a little more warm to the idea, you know, of 15, 16, whatever it may be.
The 337 said, I can see them drafting a quarterback. I actually can too, but it feels like that.
Not there.
No. Ooh, absolutely not. That would make me mad on multiple fronts.
Yes, it would.
You know my stance on this quarterback class, with all due respect to the dudes in it, not saying that they can't become something great, but I don't like the odds that I'd be gambling on using that. And then two, I mean, you're set at quarterback. This feels like one of those, maybe you take a day three flyer on a guy. I know that in their various visits, whether it's top 30 or local days or what have you, they've talked to Quinn Ewers.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder if they do something like that in one of the later rounds. Real quick before we go here, I want to circle back around to this. Nick Casario was asked, how do you feel out a player potentially making trade in division, like Christian Kirk when you acquired him for like that seventh round pick?
Yeah, I would say you never make it personal. I would say that whole notion, Seth, of, okay, if you trade in a division, look, it's some of it is a little bit of a myth. So, I mean, you're either going to do business with people or you're not. And you can't be afraid of what the repercussions or what the fan base might think. Oh, you can't do that because it's going to have a negative effect. Everybody just has to run their team how they see fit and just make the decisions that they feel are in their best interest. We're not opposed to doing anything that we feel is going to help the Houston Texans, because that's ultimately the fiduciary responsibility that we have, that I have to D'Amico and to the McNair family, is to do what I think is in the best interest of the Houston Texans, not what's in the best interest of me personally. So we'll work with anybody. Like, we're not, you're never going to, well, okay, this list of players are off limit, or list of agents or list of teams. Quite frankly, I think that's pretty parochial and narrow-minded to do business that way. So as long as we're in a position, you know, that we're in, that I'm in, then, you know, we'll be open-minded and do business and do what's best for the, always what's best for the Texans first and foremost.
And that one stood out to me just because I wanted to give him a figurative fist bump. This is one of the things I've stood on for a long time. Nick, if you're listening, consider yourself fist bumped, because I've always said this. Don't play scared. You've heard me say it. I've said it for years. Don't play scared. You know, what are you doing? You either have confidence in what you're doing, or you're scared. And a lot of general managers don't do this. A lot of general managers don't like to deal with teams in their division. Now, the Deshaun Watson thing, in which it was very obvious he wasn't going to deal with anybody in the division, that's totally different. Franchise quarterback at his, you know, at his powers back then, before we all knew you know, how much he would fall. I get that. If it's a quarterback. But if you're saying, you know, division, I don't want to, you're basically scared that you're going to look bad. You know, you don't want to look bad.
That's always the concern, right?
And I don't like general managers that are worried about looking bad.
Right. And I think that if you talk about anybody who's not concerned about appearances,
yeah,
it is Nick Casario. And I appreciate that, because that feels like an unnecessary hindrance to put on the way that you do your operation. And
yes.
So I think that that's the thing that I ultimately take away is, oh, yeah, my man's all business. He's like, let's make sure that we can get this result. Let's not worry about some of the other things that would unnecessarily make my job harder here. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Again, salute to Payne and Pendergast. Another fantastic sit down with Nick Casario. If you want to go back and listen to that, it's on the Payne and Pendergast podcast page. There's a lot of P's in that. Payne and Pendergast podcast page. Goodness,
that's
gracious.
That's a lot.
7:30 a.m. yesterday, if you want to go back and listen to that in full. All right. You're in the loop. And coming up next, let's do our Lunchtime Confessions presented by...
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Men's Clinic.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, presented by the Men's Clinic on Sports Radio 610.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
All right, first mini confession before I get to the main confession here on In the Loop. By the way, don't forget to head out to the boot.
The today. Boot, not like the state of Louisiana.
No, no.
But the boot rest, like it's a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure I get like where it
the
is.
The boys are going to be down there eating crawfish. That's in my neck of the woods, too. I'm going to stop by on the way home. No doubt about it.
I kind
of
want to.
Yeah, it's crawfish, man.
Because I actually have not gotten crawfish yet this season.
Yeah, you got to do it at least once. Anywho, mini confession before the first confession. I'm a little nervous that Byron, sitting in for Figgy today, that he might be a little upset with me. Are you upset with me, Byron?
Why would I be upset with you?
I gave you a lot of work.
Oh, no, no. It was more just making sure everything was bleeped because there's like, what, almost 18 bleeps probably or something?
Probably so, 18 or 20 yeah. bleeps. And be sure to be listening at 120. It's an amazing story that has to do with fishing, but it really doesn't. Saying I think you guys are going to enjoy that. But anyway, here's my other confession. Go ahead.
1206 West 20th Street in Houston.
Yeah.
Where the boot is.
My neck of the woods, man.
I just want to make sure.
All right. So
for me.
so you can put it in your Google Maps.
It is in my GPS right
yes.
now.
So the National Weather Service has officially released all the hurricane names for 2025. You know,
did John make it this time?
Hold on. This is the confession.
I have a feeling that you're the person that's like, I want my name to be on
there. I do not. I do not. With a hurricane?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They put a name on the list that is guaranteed to be an absolute nasty, bitter, horrible hurricane.
So what is your ex's name?
No, it's not that.
Oh, that's not what I thought. That's what you were setting up. I saw it from a mile away.
One of the names, Karen. They're going to name a hurricane Karen in 2020. You know how heinous that hurricane is going to be?
No, it's not going to be that heinous.
It's going to ask for the manager.
That's right.
It's going to be bitter. It's going to be angry. And that's no matter right. what you say, it's still going to be nasty. They actually named one of the... By the way, I have the whole list. I'll go through them here real quick to get your thoughts. Andrea, Barry, Chantel.
Chantel
seems
that's
like...
That's a classy hurricane.
That'll be like just a little tropical storm, nice and cute.
Absolutely. Chantel, keep
has
it cute,
some,
for
those
sure.
Those earrings that dangle, you know, all okay, that stuff. All Chantel. Right. Dexter
goes one of two ways, and mm-hmm. the TV show is one of the ways that's really ruined it for me.
There's going to be a spunky little redhead hurricane named Aaron.
I don't like what you're doing. I don't like what you're doing here at all. Shout out to Aaron, though. I know exactly who you're talking to.
Fernand, Gabriel, stop me when something strikes you.
Does it feel weird that it's not Fernando?
No, it's Fernand.
Fernand?
Yeah. Okay. Humberto, which I thought there was one, but I don't think they repeat them. Or maybe they do. I don't know. Imelda, Jerry, Karen, Lorenzo, Melissa, Nestor. I like that.
Like Cortez?
Yeah. Olga, Pablo, Rebecca with a K. Sebastian with an E.
I could just hear them on the Weather Channel. Tropical Storm Rebecca with a K.
Yeah, and then comes Sebastian with an E. Tanya, ooh, as in Harding. I could be, I don't know, wacky at the knees.
All right, okay.
Van and Wendy.
Okay.
But what are we doing naming a hurricane Karen?
I mean, you got to just, if the naming convention is that you use names, eventually you was going to get to that name.
I guess.
I feel like what they should do, though, is that they should use exclusively names that we have largely taken out of rotation. The ones that mm-hmm. were not, like, where is, like, Hurricane Opal? You know what I mean? Hurricane Gertrude. I feel
Gertrude.
Like that's
there was a Gertrude.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah. I feel like we should stick to, there's got to be a whole bunch of names that we're just out, that we're not using no more.
Mm-hmm.
And just stick to those, right?
Yeah.
Because I do feel a little bit bad for the people that are like, all right, yeah. That's my name.
Hurricane Karen. These are my
confessions. I actually think I disagree with one time, and I say one time like in the past, not that he was only once because I don't recall. Mm-hmm. World's Fastest Man, Michael Johnson.
Uh-oh.
This is Michael Johnson talking about the advent of all these various celebrities trying to get, you know, races with real life Olympic track athletes.
It starts to get a little bit disrespectful to these athletes to think that only in track and field. Doesn't happen. Nobody expects that in any other sport. But in track, oh yeah, we'll just let anybody who says they're fast just come in and, you know, get a chance to prove it. Can't go just play in the NBA just because you're a street ball legend. Doesn't work that way. You want to prove it? Go compete in NCAAs, you know, and become an NCAA athlete and then work your way in, you know? That's the process for every other sport. And now with Grand Slam Track, that is the process with this sport. But we will put those exhibitions in our program, right? So yeah, you know, I should speak. Come on, bro. We got some other people, you know, we got some other content creators who think that they're quick too. We can match you up against them. We're all about that.
So basically, like, you could race against, like, other people that are not professionals, but stop getting out here thinking that you could race against professionals. And I understand that premise. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Except, like, track itself, yeah, I get the sport. But, like, running is, like, the most...
A part of every sport.
Like, it is the most basal competition, right? When you as your homeboy is like, or well, I don't know if you and your homeboy talk crazy like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, all right, well, let's go race.
My homeboys talk pretty crazy.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. Do y'all ever foot race?
Not anymore.
Yeah, I was like, I feel like, what's the age where you just stop going out there and do a foot race? Because I feel like I'm probably near, or maybe just beyond it.
I can beat you. I tell you, I can beat you.
I can vividly remember the last time I had a foot race. I was hanging out at a coworker's house. He was having a birthday party, and his son was like, I think I'm faster than you. And I'm like,
no, you're not.
Can't abide by this. You're not just letting the babies get out here and talk crazy. No. Take your shoes off. Do what you got to do. I'm racing. In fact, I took my shoes off and I raced in socks. I do not care. But yeah, I feel like that's the way that, you know, when it comes down to like basic athletic competition, we get down to the basics of, well, let's race it out. Yeah. Let's do a foot race. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's fine. I think that that's fair. I do understand, though, that like there is some disrespect in people being like, I am faster than you. But that's why you then take it to the track and then beat them mercilessly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily agree with them. That's like, yeah, you can't do this.
I'm with you. I think plus running is, as you said, I mean, like every sport outside of like table tennis or curling or something is a part of every sport. And so everybody can do that. And you can say, hey, I'm fast enough to beat that guy. These are my confessions. I hate when people just refuse to take the L. They just, you know, everybody knows it's an L. Take the loss.
Is it like when people are trying to get served and they just refuse to get served?
Yeah.
Like, is that what you're doing? Like, they're just trying, here's the L. You're just like, nope, not answering the door.
No, like, you clearly are wrong. Like, everybody knows, you know even, that you're wrong. Did you see what our guy, Bruce Drennan, did?
Who?
Bruce Drennan is the guy that created the Dak Prescott to Cleveland report.
Ah.
He doubled down.
I stand by the statement that I laid out on you last week. This could come about. Let me reiterate what I did here originally in case you weren't with us last week. Dallas and Cleveland would make a deal. Cleveland would get Dak Prescott. Dallas would get Newsom, and the 33rd pick, that's the first pick in the second round. Now, if there's anything else involved in the deal, I don't know about that. I was not told that. I was not informed about anything else. There could be, for all I know. It's not the second pick in the draft. The Browns would keep that.
All right, that's enough.
My brother in Christ.
Come on.
So you're telling me.
He's doubling down.
Starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And then also... they not getting back the number 2 pick?
No.
And here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand because I know that people have been going wild all over sports about the fact that the Cowboys traded for Joe Milton, right? The dude mm-hmm. who played at Tennessee, was in New England. He actually played week 18. Had some nice stuff going on, but I mean, it's one nice game for mm-hmm. a guy. And the Cowboys traded for him. And so I know a lot of people are like, oh, that counts your days. But still, dog, I don't know that you need to go to this place. And I think that we can all admit, and I think a lot of people that watch sports and follow sports understand reporting sports is a tough job, especially because you're at the mercy of mm-hmm. your sources. And sometimes your sources have incentives to lie to you or what have you. Or sometimes people just get it wrong. I think that that's fair. You don't have to double down, dog.
No, everybody knows. And
it looks worse.
And they've showed you why it's so wrong, you know, with caps on both sides being impossible, et cetera. But you're like, nah, man, it's still right. I'm going to do it.
More power to you. I don't hope it's right because I think it's a stupid trade. Mm-hmm. But I do actually hope this right just for his sake because I do feel bad just like you. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, no, I refuse.
Just take
like,
the L.
Just hold it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Which that's a crazy sentence out of context. on the text line. Shaq is impossible to serve. I bet.
Mm-hmm.
I bet. From the 832, speaking about the how old is too old to get out here
mm-hmm.
Running. Said Pac-Man at 49 ran a 4.5 40. Yeah, Pac-Man is entirely.
It's a different animal.
Those people are different than us.
Yeah.
Those people are different than us regular humans. I was talking about, or maybe he was 39. Regardless, those people are different humans than us. I'm talking about for us regular folks just getting out here and saying, we're going to do a foot race mm-hmm. right now out in this street or on this field.
Yeah.
Or maybe you could just tell me, when's the last time you had a foot race? I would like to know what you're doing. And from the 979, please stop. DK Metcalf loses by 3 meters in a 100-meter race to a guy who cannot make the Olympics. Oh, I'm not saying that they're going to win.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Please don't understand that. It's not going to be beat.
Yeah.
But I think the idea that, yeah, we just can't race it out.
No, you can do it.
Yeah, we can absolutely race it out. And those people will just lose. All right. Somebody said, dude, you're pretty good at talking your way out of being wrong. Maybe. I think I'm often like, well, I could be wrong. It happens. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Friday. Coming up next, let's circle back around to the Cougs, who are facing off against the Duke Blue Devils tomorrow evening. What do we think is going to happen? What do we think are going to be the major things that determine whether the Cougs win or lose? We'll break that down and talk about that next. All right, we're about to talk more about your Cougs ahead of them taking on the Duke Blue Devils. A 1-1 matchup, as they all are in this Final Four. In the Final Four, it'll be tomorrow at 7:49. You'll hear that here on Sports Radio 610. In fact, some other head coaches in college basketball talked about these various teams and how they would want to see them attacked and what their strengths and weaknesses are for this tournament. So we're going to get into that. However, we stumbled upon something that I believe could be great.
I see what you did there. Stumbled.
Oh, that was not intentional. That was one of those accidents, which is, when was the last time that you got in a foot race? I am just very interested in all of that because I'm trying to figure out, like, the last time I legitimately was out here in a foot race, I raced a teenager who just, you know, had a bigger mouth than what I thought he could deliver
then
on.
Then he was fast.
Oh, no, I beat him.
That's what I'm saying. Then he was fast.
Yes, he was. I thought you said then he was fast.
Yeah.
Which, that would have really sucked if I was like, nah, man, you talking too big. Let's go and race. And then he beat me.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was a younger teenager. If he was like a bigger teenager, I'd have been worried because, you know, some of these young folks
can
run. But from the 832, two of my college buddies raced 2 years ago. We were 33, and one of them blew his hamstring.
I believe it.
So, yep. Okay, that is fair. And then another one. This is great. Wife and I overloaded on alcohol at a wedding and had to call our 16-year-old son to drive us home. He talked a lot of crap, having to come pick us up, which I imagine a teenager is going to be a little mouthy in that circumstance. So he challenged him to a foot race, 3 a.m. and drunk. Started to fall on the street, tried to dive towards the grass, ended up cracking 3 ribs on the curb, dislocated shoulder. So, yeah, I have a feeling that you did not win that race then.
I have a feeling that was his last race.
Yeah.
In all honesty, like, I've been racking my brain since we talked about this, including over the break. Like, when was the last time I raced?
Hell, when was the last time you jumped? You notice that we just stopped jumping?
I jumped yesterday.
Look at that. Good
I
for
jumped
you.
Yesterday with my 2-year-old granddaughter. We were jumping on a trampoline.
There you go.
How about that?
Yeah, go ahead and work them knees.
But I honestly, it's been so long, I can't remember the last time I, like, raced. I can't remember. It had to be with one of my sons.
You want to race in a break?
Years ago. Sure. I'll race you.
I ain't racing you. Come on. Be like, I'll race you after the show.
That's a work-related accident.
I see the game. Yeah, I see the game.
It's a work-related accident.
Hey, Parker, I know you're listening.
I'll see you in 2027.
I'll see you. All right. Let's circle back to the young people doing sports. Not.
I'll take one for the team there, baby.
let's get back to the young folks doing sports. The Cougs, well, I mean, most of the young folks, and Juwan Roberts.
Yes.
With all due respect, obviously. A fantastic 6-year senior, Juwan Roberts. He's going to have his hands full with a sizable Duke Blue Devils basketball team that they're going to be facing off against on Saturday in San Antonio. The Athletic kind of convened some college basketball coaches to break down Duke, Houston, Florida, and Auburn. Obviously, we'll focus on the two teams that will be facing off against each other on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Your Houston Cougars versus the Duke Blue Devils. I just made them one team. That's crazy. And I want to circle back around also at some point. Don't let me forget, because you did a little bit of research from another coach to get a feel of, like, what they thought about this game. But I'll give you what these coaches talked about when it came to Duke. They said, you have to decide how you're going to guard Cooper Flagg. Is it your big? And what does that mean, that now you have to deal with Cooper Flagg on the perimeter with a big guarding him out?
Yeah.
Or do you play with maybe a guard type player, and then you have to deal with when he's driving, seeing if you have that kind of ability to stay in front of him, stop him, and then maybe you're having guys come over and help, and then does that open up the possibility for him to become a playmaker? What do you think, basketball mind John, former basketball coach John Lopez?
How I would do Cooper Flagg?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it like that, but how you would defend him?
I would defend him. I'm more worried about Knipple, some of these other guys on the perimeter. what they can do. You hate to say this because then he's going to end up scoring 48 points, but almost like let him get his. I think the bigger picture that I would do is just, and this is what I can almost guarantee you, this is what Kelvin said because he's been doing it all year. You know, beat everyone back for, get back first. Get back first, stop the ball.
Get your defense.
Get
set.
Back first, yeah. Stop the ball. Make them go in a half court game. They can still beat you, and they have. They've only lost four games or whatever it is. I remember, like two or three maybe. But either way, make them go get into a half court game, and you give yourself a better puncher's chance.
For sure. Yeah. And I do think that I like the idea in a vacuum of having somebody that has the speed on the perimeter do that, mm-hmm. and then having your backstop come over and help because Houston is great at that, right? Hello, JoJo Tugler coming out of nowhere,
yeah.
knocking basketballs out of the sky. The only tough part about it is Duke, and this continuing a segment I like to call reading, you have to be able to defend the flare screen. It's possibly one of the most brilliant things that they've done is that they do a lot of pick and roll and then they do a lot of five out zoom, which mm-hmm. is a little heady, but that everybody's done. They probably the best at the flare screen when it comes to teams in the country. You mentioned Knuppel. He is as good as it gets in those actions. So you've got a guy, and if you're not familiar with the flare screen, it's setting a screen on the side and for a player to kind of work around the perimeter. So now they get the pass coming off the screen where their defender is chasing, and they can catch the ball and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
you see
is
it all the time now in college basketball.
100%. Yeah. And I think that's a terrible proposition because I think that's one of the things that Purdue did really well.
Yeah, I don't want to do that if I'm U of H by any stretch because they could kill you with that because everybody can shoot. I think, you know, in terms of defending Duke, obviously this is an amazing U of H defense, but it is going to be a little bit undersized. I don't think it's going to matter as much as people think because they're so aggressive. They're so in your face. They get in your jersey and they can trap and they double team. It seems like there's six guys on the floor when you're facing U of H. So I think they're going to defend okay if they can get back, make them get into a half court. It's still going to be a big problem because they're so big offensively. I think that, you know, I think the Cougars right now, what one of the biggest things is offensively. You know, offensively, I'm worried about what they can do because I've said it a couple of times today, but it's worth
with the Duke offense, right?
No, the U of H offense.
Interesting.
I think they have to win on offense. Because I think the guards are not going to be rendered useless. They're great guards. You know, Cryer, Uzan, and just go down the list. But it's going to be tough sledding for the perimeter game of the Cougs. I think it's going to be Juwan Roberts. It's going to be inside guys. It's going to be putbacks. And it's going to be offensive rebounds. They just attack. Second chance points, if the Cougs get more and have a good number of second chance points, they're going to win the game. I mean, they're going to flat out win the game.
I think so.
Yeah.
Also, and I hate to make it so simple, but it's going to be the law firm of Cryer, Uzan, and Sharp.
See, I'm worried about that.
Well, but in this way, I think that you're right. Like, let the bigs try and really work. But I think one of the things that Houston has done really well is those guys have served as your backstop late in the clock, late in the shot clock. If you need to just, we need to get one up, and they've delivered in those instances. And if those guys are knocking down shots, I think that's when you can really stretch Duke. Because going back to these various coaches, one of the things they talked about is if you can get two guys in the paint offensively versus Duke. Because Duke, if you allow them, if you're playing like kind of four out, which of course the Cougs do not, right?
Yeah.
But if you're playing four or five out almost, they have the length to just kind of be in the space to make it really tough on you. If you're playing two in the paint, now this thing spreads out a little bit and it makes it a little bit tougher. And the Cougs are going to do that. They'll have the likes of Tugler and Roberts and, you know, Francis when he rotates in and the other size. I think they'll do that. But ultimately, I think Roberts can get to his buckets. I think he'll have instances where some of these other guys will get to play spaces. But the ability to just knock down the tough shots late in the shot clock to, you know, make something out of a possession as opposed to getting nothing out of it sometimes is going to be so crucial for this in this type of game where points I don't think are going to be easy to come
by. Here's another thing I think people need to look for, and I think it's going to be crucial. I've talked about how they can switch everything, all five positions. Then don't let them. You know, I think the number one key is the inside guys for U of H. Number two, and this isn't something that they necessarily do a whole lot of either, is let's go ISO almost. You know, like a good old-fashioned NBA, they're bigger than you, so you should get into their bodies and try to beat them. And then when they get that, when Duke helps, which they are, they're so good at help defense, maybe there's a bounce pass, there's a lob or something like that. And that speaks to the big men as well. I want to see beating your guy rather than letting them switch on a screen. and you're still on the perimeter,
yeah,
beating your guy by yourself as best you can. Then when the help comes, there's going to be somebody open.
That's going to be interesting because I don't know that I love.
It's not like NBA-like, but close.
No, I know, but I don't know that I love putting that level of stress on you, Zan, and Cryer to have to do
that.
I
think you have to.
You probably do.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's going to be a lot of places that you don't love to be when you get into these types of matchups, but I do love that who's are equipped to try and handle this.
They can switch everything and still defend you, so don't let them.
They can.
Don't let them.
All right, where are you at with this game? And you know what? I'll give you a little bit more time. Let's finish the show by officially putting it on wax, but I think that, man, there's a lot of interesting things here. I appreciate the Athletic putting together this this conglomerate of coaches. And just to circle back, what did your intel get about how Houston should play? Because I want to officially get you to on wax again.
Well, I just stole it. I mean, he's real big on the big man.
Got you.
You know, I'm real big, and I bounced it off of him, and he didn't think it was a crazy idea. To trap as best you can as soon as Duke crosses midcourt, try to get him into some corners, try to get him to start their offense late, you know, late in the shot. Like I'm talking 18 seconds left, that's all you got. 13 seconds left, that's all you got. That limits the number of options they have offensively.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's really interesting. That game, again, tomorrow evening, 7:49, you'll be able to hear it on Sports Radio 610, obviously. And somebody said... Tugler was Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year for a reason. Travel him on flag. I think that can be interesting. The only thing that, again, is like those guys are going to have to navigate screens. And I'm also interested because it feels like the Cougs have what they've done is they've actually just kind of showed and recovered or even fully trapped off of screens. And if Duke can move the ball quickly, that's going to create some real driving lanes, some real seams in the defense that I think that Duke is uniquely capable of attacking. So I'm intrigued to see what happens in this game. A lot of people texting in various ways that
they run,
various instances of them running. Somebody said they're 50 years old. They got talked into racing by one of their coaches. The hamstrings beg to differ, I guess. Oh no, let's see. Oh, they coach baseball and they won, but their quads and hamstrings still beg to differ on winning there. Somebody said Stafford PD here. Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. Now we got an episode of Cops. Stafford PD here chased a guy who had just stolen a car. No lie. He could not jump over the fence. And when I was near him yelling at him, he literally,
he went number two.
He defecated himself. Yeah. There we go. Had to stand outside the hotel bathroom while he cleaned himself before he got into the patrol vehicle. Well, that's nice of you to let him clean himself. Although I imagine that you didn't do it for him. You did it for you.
Yeah.
So you did not have to clean the back of the car. Wow. Yeah. I would pepper those in. When was the last time you raced? This is fun. This is very fun. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610 with more of your stories of you telling us the last time you ran or raced on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. We will also jump in with some legends, some Texans legends. J.J. Watt joined Jonathan Joseph and Andre Johnson on the Goat Talk podcast. And I thought that there was some interesting stuff in there. So let's revisit some of that next.